Savitri returned to Satyavan's corpse, sat down on the ground, and placed his head on her lap. Then Satyavan suddenly regained consciousness. He repeatedly and lovingly gazed at Savitri. He said,
How unfortunate. I have been asleep for a long time. Why didn't you wake me? And where is that dark complexioned person, the one who is pulling me away? That was Lord Yama. He has departed. You are now reinvigorated. If you can, stand up.
Satyavan sat up, refreshed, and glanced at the darkening woods.
Savitri, I remember that while I was chopping wood, my head began to pain me. Then I couldn't stand up any longer, so I rested on your lap. And as you embraced me, I fell into a strange slumber. Though all around me it was dark, I saw a highly luminous being. Oh, Savitri, was I dreaming or was it real?
I will tell you everything tomorrow. I hope you feel well now. If so, we can return to your parents' place.
But as she gazed about, her mind began to change.
But it is getting dark. Listen to the wild animals roaring and barking. They are prowling about now. It is very frightening. I think it will be better if we spend the night here rather than traipsing through the woods. We can return tomorrow when the sun comes up. Besides, you may not be fully recovered from your illness.
No, Savitri. The pain in my head is gone. And my legs feel all right. So I would prefer to return tonight. I have never stayed away from the hermitage for longer than expected. When I leave it during the day, my parents worry about me. Sometimes my father, with our neighbors, he even goes searching for me to be sure that I am all right. Even before twilight comes, my mother makes me stay in the ashram. So I must return tonight, otherwise my parents will be worried and aggrieved. They're very old, and my father is blind, and I am their crutch. In fact, they once told me that they would stay alive only as long as I stay alive. Right now, my parents must be suffering because of my absence. This makes me miserable, for I live only for their pleasure. I should never have slept so long, never.
As Satyavan began to weep, Savitri wiped his tears and prayed.
If I have ever practiced asceticism, distributed wealth and charity, and performed sacrifices, oh, may this night be fortunate for my parents-in-law and husband. I have never, even in jest, told a lie. So by reason of this truth, may my parents-in-law keep their lives.
Let us start for the hermitage immediately. She stood up, tied her hair back, and lifted Satyavan in her arms. When he got to his feet, he rubbed his legs and glanced at his fruit sack. Savitri said,
Oh, you can pick fruits tomorrow, but now, to make things easy for you, I will carry your axe.
She hung the sack on the branch of a tree, lifted the axe, and assisted him. Placing his left arm over her left shoulder, Savitri embraced his waist with her right arm and began walking with him along the path. Satyavan said, I feel well now, and my strength has returned. Meanwhile, at the hermitage, Dhyumatsena miraculously recovered his eyesight and could see everything clearly. But he was extremely distressed by Satyavan's absence, so he and his wife, Saivya, anxiously searched all over for him, but they could not find him. After a while, the Brahmins living in that sanctuary approached and consoled them. Then they escorted them back to their own ashram and comforted them with stories about ancient kings. Nonetheless, the parents continued to sorrow over Satyavan's and Savitri's absence. But the sages reassured the couple that, based on various signs, their son and daughter-in-law were definitely alive. This news solaced the parents somewhat. Satyavan and Savitri soon arrived at the ashram and entered it joyfully.
After the Brahmins lit a fire and everyone sat down before it, they asked Satyavan why he had arrived so late. He related how he had fallen into a deep sleep and woke up much later. Then the Brahmins asked Savitri if she knew how King Dyumatsena had recovered his eyesight. She explained how Satyavan had died, how Lord Yama had come to take away her husband's soul, how she had complimented the Lord of Death for his exalted character, and how he in turn had granted her 5 blessings and what those blessings were. The Brahmins replied, "O Savitri, the king's family was drowning in a sea of misfortune and darkness, but you have rescued it." The ascetics applauded and revered Savitri. Then, after saying good night, they peacefully and happily departed for their ashrams. The next day, after the sun had risen and the holy men had observed their morning rituals, they gathered together. Repeatedly, they spoke to Dyumatsena of Savitri's good fortune, but they were not completely satisfied, for they wondered about the blessings she had obtained from Lord Yama that were yet to be fulfilled. Then it so happened that a large number of people from Salwa arrived there and went to King Dyumatsena. They informed him that his enemy, who years ago had usurped his throne, had recently been assassinated by his own minister. They further said that the minister had also slain the usurper's friends and allies, and when his troops heard about it, they fled. After this, all the citizens unanimously exclaimed, "Whether our former king can see or is blind, he shall again become king." The spokesman for the group then said to Dyumatsena,
"As a result of that decision, we have been sent here. Your chariot and your army have come for you. May good fortune be yours. Please come. The citizens want you to return. Kindly reassume the same position that belonged to your father and grandfather."
When they saw that the king had regained his eyesight and was able-bodied, they bowed their heads and opened their eyes in astonishment. The king paid his respects to all the elderly ascetics living in the sanctuary, and they in turn did the same. Then, after mounting his chariot, the monarch proceeded to his city, his wife and daughter-in-law trailing in a palanquin. When Dyumatsena arrived at his capital, the happy-hearted priests installed him on the throne and Satyavan as prince regent. As the years passed, Savitri gave birth to 100 sons. They were all stout-hearted and fearless. Never would they flee from the battle, and they enhanced the renown of Salwa's people. Also, Savitri's mother, Malavi, bore for Savitri's father, Aswapati, 100 sons. Thus, from a pathetic tragedy, Savitri elevated herself, her father and mother, her father-in-law and mother-in-law, and her husband's family line to the highest fortune. It is said that whoever listens to this account of Savitri reverently achieves happiness, success in all pursuits, and never experiences anguish. Thus ends the story, Savitri Saves Her Husband. And now our next story, entitled Chyavana Regains His Youth. The great Saint Brigu had a son named Chiavenna. This son had a splendid body, and he began practicing asceticism on the bank of a distant lake. Sitting on his heels with his hands on his knees, in the posture called Virasana, he remained silent and still, like an inanimate object, for a very long time. After a while, ants began to swarm over and cover his body, making him appear exactly like a lump of earth. But he continued practicing this austerity without interruption. One day, King Sarayati, accompanied by his numerous troops, 4,000 wives, and his only daughter, visited this superbly enjoyable lake for recreation. His daughter's name was Sukunya. Being in the prime of her youth, she wore a single piece of cloth and exquisite jewelry, and she looked very beautiful. Accompanied by her maids, she began to enjoy herself by looking at the tall trees and lovely scenery. As she meandered about, she wandered away from her companions and approached the anthill that had enveloped Chiavenna. Feeling playful, she began to snap the twigs of flower-bearing trees. When Chiavenna saw her through a hole in the anthill, he was seized with sexual desire. So he called out to her, but because he had a low voice, she did not hear him. However, as she approached the anthill, she noticed that something was glowing from inside the hole. Confused and curious about this, she said, "Oh, what is this?" Then, grabbing a thorny branch, she poked it into the hole and pierced the sage's eyes. Feeling intense pain, Chiavenna became angry. He therefore cursed her father's troops by preventing them from urinating or defecating. When the men discovered that they could not answer their calls of nature, they became sorely distressed. The king, surprised and perplexed by the situation, then proceeded to study it more carefully. He soon realized that it was Chiavenna who was covered by the anthill, and that he alone, by his mystic power, could, if provoked, cause such a calamity. He thus shouted out, "Which person has offended the famous sage Chiavenna, who is old, always absorbed in asceticism, and of an angry temper? If anyone knows, tell me immediately. Which person has offended the famous sage Chiavenna, who is old, always absorbed in asceticism, and of an angry temper? If anyone knows, tell me immediately." One of the men replied,
"We do not know if anyone has offended the sage. We suggest you inquire further into the matter."
The king, using threat and appeasement, asked his friends about the situation, but they also knew nothing about it. However, when Sukunya saw that the soldiers were in anguish and her father was disturbed, she explained to him,
"As I neared the anthill, I saw something shining in it. Thinking it was a glowworm, I poked it with a branch of thorns."
Upon hearing this, King Sarayati quickly went to the anthill. He joined his palms reverentially and begged the sage,
"O great saint, please forgive my daughter for what she did to you. It was done out of ignorance and innocence."
Chiavenna replied,
"Because she is puffed up with pride, she has disregarded me and poked at my eyes. Even she, beautiful as she is and lacking reason due to ignorance and temptation, will have to pay a price. And the price is, she will have to become my wife. On no other condition will I forgive her."
Sarayati immediately gave his young daughter to the aged, high-souled Chiavenna, who was then satisfied with the king. Having gained the sage's favor, the king, along with his troops and wives, returned to the capital. But Sukunya stayed with the ascetic and began to serve him, observing austerities and following the rules of marriage. She sincerely worshipped Chiavenna and also cared for his guests as well as the sacred fire. One day, those celestials, known as the twin Oswins, happened to see Sukunya when she had just bathed. Having beheld her exceptional legs, they approached her and said, "Oh, lovely one, whose daughter are you? And what are you doing in the forest? Please tell us." Sukunya bashfully replied, "I am Saryati's daughter and Shyavan's wife." The Oswins smiled, and one of them said, "Why did your father give you to a person who was about to die? Why, your beauty flashes in this forest like lightning. Not even on the planets of the gods have our eyes feasted upon such beauty as yours. Even without wearing your adornments and robes, you decorate this forest admirably. And yet you do not look as lovely as you could when beautified with every adornment and magnificent clothes. Yet you do not look as lovely as you could when beautified with every adornment and magnificent clothes. But why are you serving such an old, feeble husband, one who cannot enjoy pleasure or support you? Oh, goddess, renounce Javana and instead accept one of us for your husband. You should not spend your youth wastefully." But Sukunya replied, "I am devoted to my husband, so do not harbor any doubts about my faithfulness. But we are the famous celestial physicians, and we can and will make your husband young and handsome. But if we do, you must then choose only one of us three for your lord. Therefore, please bring your husband here now." Sukunya then went to Chyavana and related to him what the two gods had told her. And Chyavana replied,
"Yes, you may do it."
After he and his wife went to the twins, they told him to enter the lake. As he did, they accompanied him. And the very next moment, they all emerged from the lake in handsome, youthful bodies wearing shining earrings. But while they were resplendent to look at, they all looked exactly alike. Then one of them said to Sukunya, "Oh, lucky one, now choose one of us for your husband." This obviously would not be easy. But before selecting, Sukunya meditated deeply on each of them. When she intuitively knew which of the three was her husband, she picked him. Chyavana was very pleased with her choice and his new youth, and said to the Oswins, "Since with your help I have regained my youth and beauty as well as my wife, I will enable you after some time to drink the coveted exhilarating soma juice in front of the king of the gods himself." Having heard about the ecstasy that such a beverage could arouse, the twins were delighted and returned to the celestial world. Chyavan and Sukunya also spent their days joyously, like the gods. When King Saryati learned that Chyavana had regained his youth, he became overjoyed. So he, accompanied by his wife and troops, went to the sage's ashram. And as he and his wife saw the couple, who looked like two divine youths, their ecstasy was as great as if the monarch had won the whole world. The saint received them respectfully, and the king sat down near him, and they conversed pleasantly on auspicious topics. Then Chyavana said, "O king, I shall soon officiate at a sacrificial ceremony to be undertaken by you, so please procure the necessary articles for this." This made the king extremely happy, and he expressed his approval of the idea. So, on a favorable day, suitable for the start of a religious ceremony, Saryati ordered that a sacrificial shrine be built, which would be beautiful to look at and excellently furnished with all the requisites. There, Chyavana served as the king's chief priest. As the ceremony was being conducted, Chyavana took up a certain amount of soma juice to offer to the Oswins. As he did, the chief god, Indra, indignantly said,
"In my opinion, the Oswins have no right to receive the offering of soma juice. They are celestial physicians or mere servants of the gods. This alone disentitles them to it."
job and argued. But they do great things. They have glorious souls and are especially gifted with handsomeness and kindness. It is they who have transformed me into an everlastingly youthful person, just like the gods. Thus, why should you and the other gods be entitled to the distilled soma juice and not they? O king of the gods, I want you to know that the Oswins also rate as gods. But Indra insisted,
these two practice the healing art, so they are only servants. At their will, they assume various forms and wander about in the world of human beings. So how can they justly lay claim to the soma juice?
Indra continued to argue in this way. However, Chyavana decided to disregard him altogether. Therefore, he was just about to take up a goodly portion of soma juice to offer to the Oswins when Indra exclaimed,
if you take up that soma juice and give it to the twins, I will hurl my thunderbolt weapon at you.
Glancing at Indra smilingly, Chyavana took up a considerable amount of the soma juice to offer to the twins. Then Indra displayed a terrible-looking thunderbolt and was just about to hurl it when Chyavana paralyzed his throwing arm. The sage next recited some holy chants, made an offering into the fire, and prepared to kill Indra. Then, by virtue of the ascetic's mystic power, an evil spirit materialized there. His name was Mudda, and he was huge, powerful, gigantic, so big that he could not be measured by either the gods or the demons. His mouth was terrible, his teeth sharp, and one of his jaws rested on the earth while the other one touched the heavens. He had four fangs that were 900 miles long and had four other fangs that were 90 miles, all of which resembled palace towers and the ends of sharpened spears. His two arms were like hills, and they extended 90,000 miles. He had two eyes that looked like the sun and the moon, and his face vied with the colossal fire that blazes during the universal dissolution. His mouth was open. His lightning-like tongue was licking it, and his gaze was so terrifying that he looked as though he was about to swallow up the world. The demon, roaring loudly and hideously, then charged at Indra with the intention of eating him up alive. When Indra saw Mada's open mouth coming towards him, looking like the death god himself, he fearfully licked the ends of his mouth repeatedly. Horrified and tormented, he shouted out,
Oh, Chyavan! Oh, Brahmin! Please believe me that from today on, the two Oswins will have a right to the soma juice. I swear it! I swear it! By your power, you have entitled them to it. Oh, please, be merciful and try to understand. I have deliberately acted in this way to provide you with an occasion to display your power and spread your glory. That's all I had in mind. Please, I have also done it to spread the renown of Sukanya's father. So please, be merciful to me, and may it be as you desire.
Chyavan's anger was quickly pacified, and thus he freed Indra from the demon. He then demolished Mada, which literally means intoxication, and distributed particles of him throughout the world in drinks, women, gambling, and sporting events. He further satisfied Indra with a drink of the soma and helped King Saryati to worship all the gods and spread his fame and power all over the world. Thereafter, Chyavana spent his days joyfully in the forest in the association of his devoted wife, Sukunya. And this ends the story of Chyavana Regains His Youth.